If you're thinking about it, she's talking about it. Join the conversation at 203-333-9422. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the show. We've got a little bit of breaking news. Senator Richard Blumenthal on the air with us, but five states have just been added to the COVID-19 joint quarantine list, which concerns us here in Connecticut as well as New York and New Jersey. The states added today include Arizona, Minnesota, Nevada, Rhode Island, and Wyoming. So Rhode Island now being added to the list, that's important for a lot of us. And Nevada going back and forth like a yo-yo. Joining us now is Senator Richard Blumenthal, a member of the Judiciary Committee. Welcome, Senator Blumenthal. Hello and good morning.
Good morning to you. Thanks so much for having me.
It's always a pleasure. So I'm sure you heard the news that Senator Romney is going to support President Trump's nomination. In other words, he may not vote for it, but in other words, he's going to support his right to move forward with the process.
I certainly am aware of that news, which diminishes our chances of reaching out to Republican colleagues and persuading them that the choice of a future nominee should be the next president and the next Senate, which was, by the way, Justice Ginsburg's dying wish. And certainly the colleagues who are now saying they'll vote before the election are completely breaking their word. They promised that they would oppose a vote before the election inaugural. This rank hypocrisy, I think, will cause the American people to stand up and speak out. At least I hope they will. We're going to take our case to the American people and fight like hell, because Justice Ginsburg was a fighter. And not only did she want this election to be after the election and inaugural, but simple fairness and consistency required to give the American people a say. Their voices should be heard in the election before any nominee is confirmed.
Senator Blumenthal, what can you do about it? What weapons are in the arsenal? What could you possibly do about it, though?
We have some tools. They are limited. Certainly, we face an uphill battle because the Republicans have the majority, and a majority vote is all that's required to move forward. But you know, there's an additional point here, and in a sense, you just made it when you recited the states that have been added to the COVID list. We're in the midst of a raging pandemic, a public health care crisis, and an economic crisis. Instead of treacherously rushing a Supreme Court nominee who'd almost certainly vote to dismantle and decimate the Affordable Care Act, we should be addressing this pandemic and providing another relief package. We should be dealing with this healthcare crisis. The nominee to the Supreme Court from Donald Trump, and he said it would be a strong test. He said he was disappointed with Justice Roberts because he preserved the Affordable Care Act, almost certainly would vote against preserving the ACA. And that case is before the court right now. Literally, it will be argued.
Well,
right,
you don't
after.
Really know. But, you know, one of the things we know about Supreme Court justices is that once they get on, they assert their independence. So we don't really know how they're going to vote. Let me ask you this, Senator Blumenthal. Is there anybody that President Trump could nominate that you would, with an open mind, be able to vote for? Is there anybody?
Certainly, there are a vast number of people who are Republicans whom I would support. There's nothing about party that should interfere with supporting a Supreme Court nominee who is qualified. But keep in mind, Lisa, that President Trump has continuously nominated far-right fringe candidates who are committed to certain ideological principles. For example, his list is vetted, it's screened for certain positions. He said that would be a strong test. Whether that nominee would oppose the Affordable Care Act, whether that nominee would vote to overturn Roe v. Wade. It's not something I am making up. And you're absolutely right. Once a justice is on the Supreme Court, they evolve. They sometimes change. I was a law clerk for Justice Blackmun when
Were
he was
really?
Nominated.
I didn't
yes.
know that. Wow, what a thrill. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my, I had no idea.
And, you know, when he was nominated, he was regarded as he was called one of the Minnesota Twins with the Chief Justice Warren Burger, who was very, very conservative. Justice Blackmun evolved over years, in fact, decades of service on the Supreme Court. But it doesn't happen overnight. And this new justice will be voting on the Affordable Care Act literally this term or next term. And so we can't count on an evolution in views when we're dealing with something so fundamental as destroying protection for people with pre-existing conditions. And now, as you know, COVID will be regarded as a pre-existing condition because of scarring of lungs and other after effects. Being a woman is a pre-existing condition. There was discrimination against women. All kinds of protections will be absolutely eviscerated, and our whole healthcare system will be thrown into the chaos that existed before. And I know personally that because I was involved in trying to get insurance coverage for people who were denied it on the basis of their so-called pre-existing conditions. Yeah. As Attorney General, I fought for them. We don't want to go back to that world. We don't want to roll back the clock on the Affordable Care Act, not to mention on reproductive rights. Overturning Roe v. Wade would have real-life practical consequences for individual people, particularly women. So this Supreme Court nominee will touch lives in a very real and tangible way.
Do you have any regrets, Senator Blumenthal, about the ways in which your leadership, the Democrats, did you read the op-ed piece that Brett Stevens wrote today in the Times in which he implored, you should read it, he implored Mitt Romney to vote to delay, which Mitt Romney wasn't listening, obviously, didn't care what Brett Stevens had to say. But what he did was he recited the ways in which the Democrats, under their leadership, had eroded the filibuster, the 60 vote, and this kind of thing over time. And we know what Mitch McConnell did in 2017. He just put the clincher in it. But it was Harry Reid who got rid of the filibuster for other judges and put the camel's nose under the tent. Do you have any regrets about your own Democratic leadership that got rid of a lot of these traditional bulwarks that made some votes have to be bipartisan?
Hindsight is always 20/20. Looking back now, maybe we do it differently. But the point is that Mitch McConnell is the one who eliminated the filibuster for Supreme Court appointments. That's what is key now. And more than eliminating the filibuster rule, he has broken all the norms. He's broken his own word, which was no votes during an election year on a Supreme Court justice. President Obama nominated Merrick Garland 9 months before the election. Here we are 42 days before the next election, and Mitch McConnell is rushing this nominee instead of addressing the pandemic. We have no next relief package. We have no extension of unemployment insurance, no aid for state and local governments, no aid for small businesses. They are hanging by a thread. You've talked to them. I've talked to them. They are struggling to keep their doors open. And the Paycheck Protection Program is going by the board. There is no aid through the stimulus payments for families struggling to put food on the table. And there's no additional money for testing or other public health experts in the midst of an economic crisis and a public health pandemic. That's what we should be doing instead of nominating or confirming someone who is going to overturn the Affordable Care Act and eliminate all protection for people with pre-existing conditions.
Let me ask you this, Senator Blumenthal. Yesterday we talked, I pretty much devoted most of my show to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, frankly. And I was really touched to read that you had your own interactions with her arguing in front of the Supreme Court. Can you just give us a little bit of window into what those cases were about and what it was like? And I don't know whether she asked you a question directly or you answered her directly. I just want to hear a little bit about that.
Sure. The four cases that I argued as Attorney General before the United States Supreme Court involved various issues relating to prisoner status under the law, the sex offender registry, where people who are convicted of sex offenses are compelled to register, protection for communities and people that was challenged, and I defended it. And then a regulatory case involving energy transmission, a very complicated technical case. And three of those cases I argued before Justice Ginsburg. And what I remember about her is her incisive, very challenging, penetrating questions. She was slight of stature, soft of voice, but she packed a really powerful punch in very few words when she asked a question. And I remember one particular question in that energy case where she went right to the heart of the matter, you know, minced no words, the core of the issue. And I sort of looked at her as though I was going to be hit by a freight train.
Wow.
And I managed to answer it. But, you know, she followed up. And her insights about people and the law were so valuable. I knew her only casually in an informal way, not like many who knew her well. But she was also extraordinarily caring and compassionate. She had a deep warmth for people, which, of course, was exhibited in her pre-court days. She was an extraordinary litigator and advocate as a Supreme Court arguer, not just as a justice. So, you know, I have many memories of watching her on the bench, even when I wasn't arguing, and all of them will continue to inspire me.
Yeah, what an inspirational person, really. It's incredible to think about a life of perseverance and tenacity. So it circles me back. We're chatting with Senator Blumenthal. I hear your passion. I hear your outrage about what's going on right now. I imagine there's also a level of frustration. But what can you do? What can you do? You're in the Judiciary Committee. Are you going to try and stall things? I mean, what are your procedural, what are the tactics that you can do to achieve the result that you want? What can you do?
We're still early in the process, believe it or not. Justice Ginsburg died 4 days ago. And I'm, frankly, speaking very personally, continuing to focus on her legacy, the way she championed individual rights and liberties. She fought gender discrimination. She worked for gun violence prevention, marriage equality, voting rights, all of those principles and values. But that inspires me to continue the fight for those rights and liberties and to seek a next justice who will continue to sustain them. And I believe that we should give the American people a say, that the next president and the next Senate should be the ones to confirm the next justice. And we may be limited in the tools we have, but we have yet to see who the nominee is. That may determine some votes among my Republican colleagues. They may decide they need more time to review the credentials of that nominee in all good conscience. I'm going to appeal to their conscience and their better angels. Obviously, the Republicans are simply trying to drive this nominee through with haste and rush without regard to who it is, what the qualifications are. They want someone who will overturn Roe v. Wade and decimate the Affordable Care Act, among other goals. It is politically driven, as has been their process of using the Senate as a conveyor belt to, in effect, pack the courts. But we are going to take our case, the American people. And I'm hopeful that the American people will stand up and speak out and perhaps persuade some of my Republican colleagues that the next president, the next Senate ought to be the ones to confirm the next justice.
Senator Richard Blumenthal, thank you very much for being on the show. As always, we really appreciate your insight and thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Always great to be with you, and thanks for all your great work.
And Happy New Year, Senator. Happy New Year.
Thank you so much, and to you. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we'll be right back. More of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.